Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Thursday night, and that's the major slap of the bass, and it's time for the Sports Crib, home of Smash Mouth Radio, presented by the Sports Crib and hosted by Mr. Connie Lua. Well, the introductions have went down, the national anthem has been sung, and Game 6 is getting ready to start. Of course, we're going to have an extensive discussion about Kevin Durant, his decision, the Warriors' decision, what it possibly means to his free agency. And of course, for those of you that don't know, back in 97, on this same date, Steve Kerr actually clinched, the Bulls actually clinched their title. So let's see how all these things play out tonight for the Warriors. A lot of tradition involved. Splash Brothers back in command. So let's see. Toronto in 6, Toronto in 7. Well, Golden State makes the comeback. 3-1 down. we're actually waiting for Don and Kalani to get in. I know Kalani has some studies that he's enrolling for, and as well as his obligations with the sports youth football league. We're planning to do a crossover promotion here soon with the boys, the young men that I have on my boxing show, and the youth of Kalani's football league. And the purpose of this is just actually showing, you know, the young man, you know, that dreams do come true if you put in a lot of hard work and dedication. A couple of the young men, one of the young men is actually going to be fighting on TV, you know, and win, lose, or draw, you know, how many young men get to say that their career has actually brought them to a TV appearance. So, yes, we're looking to make a great crossover there and extend our public relations to the youth, who is actually what all these sports are all about. We have Tiger already. I'm not sure he's in the clubhouse. The last time I looked, I think he was on 14. He was one under. And I believe that's 4 off the lead of 5 under. So it's always good when Tiger's back in the game. And, hey, it's prime time, 6 o'clock. People are still watching golf. It's been on since this afternoon. So, you know, whenever Tiger plays, I know this young man that you're talking about now. He's won the past couple majors. I'm not going to try to butcher up his name, but he's also in contention. I think right now he's 3 under. So that combination, it seems like golf is making a comeback. If not, least the fans are able to watch it on prime time, and they are very much aware that the niche audience is on board. It's Thursday. We have 2 days until the cut. And one of the questions I'm going to ask the panelists tonight, as they come in, is will Tiger be playing Saturday? Will he make the cut? Like I said, so far, looks like things are relatively calm. But we don't know where that cut might be. This might be one of those tournaments. When you look at the early rounds here, it might be one of those very, very low-scoring tournaments, and you might have to be below par to make the cut on Saturday. So, once again, we'll see. Tiger, always good for golf. I see Don is here, so let's kind of jump right into the show here. Mr. Hayes, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry a little bit late. I got caught up in something and time slipped by, but I'm ready for the show now.
Well, speaking of getting caught up in something, we have Tiger playing today. It's the U.S. Open. We've seen, it's a prime time event, and there always seems to be more excitement when there's Tiger, even though we do have the young gentleman, Boric, I think his name is, that has won the last few tournaments, and right now, I think it's the Tiger's minus one, he's minus three, but Don, do you think that Tiger will be playing Saturday?
I think so. I mean, he's got some wind in the sails right now, and I think he's working on consistency with his game. But we've talked about Tiger Woods before, mm-hmm. and whether or not he's back or not, I think he is back.
Don, I don't know whether you actually watched any. Of this today, I think I watched maybe three or four holes, but that was because I was waiting for the show to come on. But personally, are you watching the U.S. Open, any parts of it, because Tiger's in it, or because it's probably the most interesting major sport on right now, other than the NBA Finals, which is just beginning?
Well, I'm going to be honest about my viewership of golf, okay? When the tournaments are on, I usually watch it on Saturday or Sunday. I got a lot going on, so I don't really have time to sit there and watch golf. I do, it's a good Sunday afternoon, especially if there's just a couple of strokes separating the leaderboard, but no, I have to admit I have not watched any of the golf U.S. Open today, or I won't do it tomorrow either.
Okay, yeah. It was like I was saying, a lot of people are going to watch golf. I think those that are going to watch golf today either have to be very diehard fans or Tiger fans or something like that. I know a lot of times it's a major tournament and Tiger's not in the running, sometimes I will look for something else to watch. But Donna, I want to talk about something that was a favorite of yours, and you kind of gave it some really glowing accolades when it first began. And we were talking about spring football again and professional football after the regular NFL season. Well, other leagues went up bust. And Donna, I'm starting to wonder, because I've seen this ever since Donald Trump wanted to become a football owner. But it just doesn't seem that either there's the enthusiasm or the fan base, or maybe it's just that the NFL is too big. Don, why are people acceptance of college football, NFL football, but anything other than that seems to go by the wayside? Do we have too much football?
Well, I think there's two factors. A lot of people talk about the NFL being the only professional football league, and you know, they always have competitors. You go back to the World League of American Football, what was it, back in the early 70s, and then we had the USFL, and now we had the Alliance American. We have all these different leagues pop up, XFL. For some reason, NFL is the, you know, that's the professional sports league that keeps getting challenged by competitors. Mm-hmm. No one ever goes out and forms, you know, a competitor to the NBA. No one is forming a competitor to Major League Baseball. And I think people have gotten accustomed to just having their college football. And, you know, if you think about, you know, your college athletics, they're very regional. You can go drive probably, if you live in the United States, you can probably drive within, you know, 100 miles of any town and find a football game on Saturday. I mean, you live in Montana, and you got, you know, Montana State. I mean, you know, even South Dakota, North Dakota, they have football teams. You got Division III, Division II, NAIA. You have all these different divisions, and football is just kind of ingrained with us. And it's the same as with, you know, Major League Football. I mean, yeah, professional football. You got the NFL. The NFL is established. They have the roots. They've established relationships with the colleges, and there's all kind of factors that inhibit alternatives to the NFL from popping up. Namely, money. You know, people are, after the experience of the USFL and the XFL and the Alliance American Football, it was all about money. They could not pump in enough money to sustain because the NFL is so established. So if someone says, hey, Don, we want you to come invest some money in this new football league, I'm not going to do it. Now, if you put a team on the field and it's in San Antonio, I'll go watch it. That's going to be the sum of my investment is just buying a ticket and some concessions. That's about it. But the NFL is not going to be displaced anytime soon.
But, Don, I do understand that part, and that sounds reasonable. But if you remember, the European Football League was kind of established as, I guess I want to say, the foreign team of the NFL. I mean, they actually backed certain teams, you know, the team in Germany. I think one of them was backed by the Rams. You had another one that actually backed by a couple of the teams. There was a team in England. Let's see, England, Germany. Not sure if there was one in Spain. But anyway, my point being, the NFL tried that experiment in Europe, and it didn't work. But we did end up getting some fairly good football players from there. I mean, you know, I can't really, let's see, what was his name? Not Dix. I forget. One of those guys with a really crazy name. He came over, played a little running back in the NFL. But do you think that maybe the NFL should start something like that domestically here in the United States, and maybe that would be more favorable than trying to put, you know, your NFL teams in Europe and, you know, having games in Mexico City and Frankfurt, Germany, and two games over in England? I mean, is there something that the NFL can do if they want to capture the attention of the football fans for more than those 16 or 18 games of the season?
Well, it's funny you mention that because I had I have a master plan in my head. Yeah, I think this might work. So what you do, you form a spring league, and it consists of all your draft picks, your maybe some rookies from the previous draft who didn't get a lot of playing time, a lot of guys in your practice squad, and you play like a five-game season exhibition. No championships, no playoffs, just five games. And you would play them in places where there is no professional football right now. For example, the Cowboys could have their little rookie league in the spring, and they'd play all their games in San Antonio. Houston could take their spring league, play all their teams in El Paso, maybe Lubbock, maybe Austin. And, you keep it in state, keep it regional. But I think that would be a good way to, first of all, evaluate your talent, see what you got, and, you know, give these other kids, you know, who might be free agents a chance to see what they can do. Instead of, you know, drafting them, taking your risk there and eliminate some of the mini camps. And I think, this is what I would do. Once you had that little spring league, you play five games, then you start offering money. You don't start offering money to your draft picks until they play in that spring league. And that keeps guys from, not signing or, walking out, whatever. Say, hey, let's see what you can do against other guys you're in your league and see what happens. I know that's kind of a pipe dream, but I would like to see something like that rather than have an alternative to a rival to the NFL. Or maybe, let me go back and say this. The reason I'm going five games is because you don't want to wear and tear on the body. You don't want to have like play a full season, just five games, play 12 minute quarters, not 15, 12 minute quarters. And, just see what they can do.
Well, you made me kind of knock things out of order here because you talked about mini camps. Don, I mean, I know, like, when you play college ball or any type of sports or on a professional level or higher level, you have your spring practice, you have your spring training and all that, but this is something that you constantly do to hone your craft. If you're going to a University of Texas program, you're training all year round. You're in the gym, you're watching film, you're doing this and you're doing that. So, Don, from a professional point of view, because these guys, once you get to that level, you're on the top up there. So, do you think that that many camps are beneficial from these guys? Most of these guys now are really using muscle memory.
Well, I have no inside knowledge. I've known a few people go through mini camps, and a lot of it is you'll have a guy who let's say is drafted as an athlete. He's a cornerback. He's also a kick returner, or maybe you have a quarterback who might have some, like a huge upside. I'm talking about these guys who are drafted like fourth, fifth round. Maybe might have some mechanic issues with his throwing motion, whatever. But they did go to mini camp. They tried to fix it, try to work on it. They also work on a lot of film study. When you go through the combine, for example, they test your strength, they test your weight, you know, and all these other stuff. But the other thing they do, they give you an IQ test. Mm-hmm. They want to know what your IQ is. They want to know, you know, can you absorb an NFL playbook? Because let me tell you, a high school playbook, it's, you know, it's about an inch thick. College playbook, it's about, you know, maybe 3 or 4 inches thick. An NFL playbook, it's like the, you know, New York City phone directory. It's well, I just dated myself. People don't make phone books anymore, do they? You just type it in on the internet, find a phone number. Yeah, I don't make. But anyway, for those listeners who remember, about 20 years ago, you were given the phone book, and New York City had a real big one. But anyway, you know, so you're asking your players to learn, to absorb a lot of information, learn new plays, new formations, blitz packages, and, you know, the coaching staff and the front office, they want to find out, you know, can this guy get it done mentally as well as physically? So that's the whole purpose of mini camps. And I'm just saying, have a little, like a spring league to figure all that out too, because you can teach and play and see what they do on the field. And then after the season, you come in and say, okay, here's your offer. This is what we're going to offer you. That way you're getting paid on your merit, not your potential.
Okay. Let's take this a step further. Everyone is complaining about, you know, we don't need preseason games and you know, perhaps extending the season. But we know those are primarily for the finances. But let's talk about just from the player's point of view here. You spoke of, you know, possibly having a five-game preseason. I'm going to call it a preseason. But these are for rookies and free agents, more or less, or late draft round picks. Do you think that would be more efficient than the current pregame season? Because during those pregames, I mean, except for maybe the last two, or in some cases one, you're not going to see any of the named guys out there. So, I mean, that does make sense to me, Don, but, I mean, what do you think would be more important for judging, your team's readiness to play, having the system that you're talking about, or our current system? Which do you think would be more effective?
Well, I mean, the current system works to a point. I mean, it must, because we keep using it, but I think there's always room for improvement. And, you know, I would just like to, you know, and part of me is being a little bit selfish because I like football and I don't mind watching football in the spring. But I just think it'd be good for the NFL because, like I said, you figure out how well your draft went and you put, you know, theirs against yours, and you play in cities that don't have franchises yet, and that, you know, that generates interest. Because let's face it, right now, NFL, the numbers are down in viewership. You know, we're seeing a little bit of upswing in the NBA, because we have a good, you know, finals going on right now. Baseball, it's up and down, but football kind of has taken on a chin the last few years. And so I think they need to, you know, if you want to generate a little more interest, a little bit more viewership, I think that might be something to do in the spring, you know. And like I said, just play a little small season, five-game season, and by then you should know what you have on your roster. Then you can start preparing for the fall for the real stuff.
Don, here's something that I don't understand. Everybody says that, you know, football attendance is down and you know, revenue is down. Okay. Now, I'll agree that butts in seats are down, but I think it's because of social media and because there's so many platforms to watch games on. Every team has a network. I know I subscribe to a Steeler a network that every Friday during the season they give us a call and we talk to either one of the coaching staff or one of the players. And I'm sure every team has this. Now, last year, they made $200 billion, Don. That's what a B. How in the hell can you say football is declining? They make more money than every other sport combined.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the apparel companies and TV deals, but I can kind of speak a little bit from observation. A lot of kids nowadays, they hear about these concussions and head injuries, and basketball is becoming a big money thing. A lot of your better athletes are heading towards basketball. Hell, even here in Texas, I hate to say it because it gives me creeps, but damn, soccer is getting popular. Every time I turn around and drive down the street, there's kids out there playing soccer. And these parents are kind of, a lot different than my parents. My parents are like, yeah, get your ass out there and play some football, you know. Nowadays, like, well, I don't want my little baby to play football. He might get hurt, you know, he's too small. And so that's going to eventually catch up at the NFL because you're having less kids play, you know, in youth leagues and YMCA and Pop Warner. And then that transfers to middle school. Then it comes to high school, college. And so, I live in the football state, and I'm even seeing a little bit of a little bit of decline in some of not the attendance, but the participation.
Yeah. Participation, yeah, I think that's something that is an ongoing discussion. Nowadays, people don't want their kids playing tackle football to a certain age, this, that, and the other. In today's world, those are legitimate health concerns. Donna, I know. I think, let's see, and I'm really going to date myself because, as I said, I remember if you were a lineman, you had a single face guard, and if you were a lineman, if you ran the ball, or you were the if you were the quarterback, you had three grills. If you were running back, you had two. I know you don't go quite that far back, Don, but I mean, get out there and play some football. Go out there and play with your friends. And if you went out there and play with your friends, there was usually either football or basketball involved. I think the participation level is down. But, when I look on here sometimes, I'm looking at seats available, $400 and things like that. You know, I mean, hey, I understand, but then again, wasn't quite like that back in our day. But now they've talked with this thing about the referees. They want the referees to have more responsibility for their calls in the latter part of the game. They expect now them to make late reviews, including pass interference. Wonder where that came from. Don, do you think this is a positive or negative effect? I mean, first of all, we complain about how long the games last because of instant replay. then you want to give the refs more responsibility. You point out the calls that the referees missed after the game, and you put more spotlight on them. Now you want to give them more responsibility. Don, is this fair or not?
Well, there has to be changes, but I'm not sure exactly which path the NFL should go with that. I know we're all, well, I should say we're all, but we all know that that blown call cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl. Whether or not they would win the Super Bowl, I don't know, but I know that, you know, Breeze versus Brady would have been great TV. I think it would have been a much better game than what we got. And I think the powers that be kind of look at that and said, damn, that ref. I mean, because he cost some money, some people some money. So I think, you know, the networks, you know, they kind of get the pressure on the league. The league puts pressure on the owners, and owners say, okay, let's meet, let's discuss this. And they, you know, they brainstorm. They say, well, let's make this change so it doesn't happen again. But I think sometimes what they don't understand is that they're opening up a whole other can of worms, because I think, you know, the refs will – so, well, if it's even questionable, they're going to throw a flag. And when they do that, it's going to stop the game for how many, you know, a minute and a half, whatever the time limit is. Mm-hmm. So every flag that's thrown is going to stop the game. And I think refs are going to be so they're going to be so worried about missing the call that even if it's close, they're going to throw a flag. And it's just one of those things that, you know, because of one little incident last year, it's going to affect the game in the future.
Yeah, a long time into the future. But you can't explain why that call wasn't made. But an instant replay in that instance might have got the Saints to the Super Bowl. Like you say, whether or not they won, that's another question. But it is very, very silly to miss a game-changing experience just due to lack of call, lack of confidence, whatever you want to call it. But Don, Kalani's not here, but hey, guess who was picked for Hard Knocks? After all the lobbying and, you know, we talked about the Richie Incognito signing. You got AB that's going to be mic'd up. You got the kind of, I don't know whether we want to call it a quarterback controversy, but we have a constant quarterback discussion about John Gruden and his confidence in David Carr. Don, was this the right team to pick for Hard Knocks? I mean, you know, to me it's kind of like the, I don't know if you remember, but it was the Cincinnati Bengals when they were on Hard Knocks, and they had all this constant turmoil going on. I mean, it was actually fun TV if you're a rival. You know, when you talk about the cohesiveness of a team and the league, the face of the league and things like that, I mean, it was kind of a disaster. What do you think this Hard Knocks series is going to be with the Raiders?
Oh, it'll be awesome as usual. I mean, the thing, it doesn't matter which team's on Hard Knocks. You're always going to have good stories show up, and you're going to, you know, you're going to attach to the free agent guy or late round draft pick who is on the bubble. And, you know, that's always good drama to watch. But yeah, I think the fact that it's, you know, the Raiders and, you know, the characters they always seem to assemble, I think it'll be lots of fun to watch.
I was also thinking that, you know, maybe the Giants would be a good candidate too. You know, I think. What do you think, Don?
Yeah, I mean, you could pick any team, you know, Raiders, Giants, you could, you know, I think the Texans might be fun to watch. I know they did Dallas a few years ago, and it was kind of the Jerry Jones. He had to be Jerry Jones like in every frame of the freaking series, so that kind of got old. But I think Kansas City Chiefs would be a good one too. So, but I have fun watching the Raiders.
Yeah, those teams you mentioned that you mentioned, they would be good, but the Giants and the Raiders, I think, would be especially appropriate for Hard Knocks. But Don, hey, let's talk a little NBA. First of all, I didn't make any room for it today, so I'm going to let you start out here by talking about your Spurs. Anything? I know Pop keeps closed mouth, but what's happening down there? Any talks about maybe acquiring AD or any of these free agents, or what are you looking forward to in 2019 for the Spurs?
Well, the Spurs, they're. I don't see large changes coming, as far as, LaMarcus and Deshaun, but I do know that Popovich did lose his top assistant. I think it's Massimo, I think his name. He's leaving to go coach a team in Italy. He is in the an Italian national. He's considered one of the the up and coming coaches in basketball, and he's going to go back to Italy, coach in Europe, and hopefully get some experience to be a head coach in NBA. I think that's next you're going to start seeing are some of the non-Americans start coaching, in the upper echelons, head coaching jobs. I think that's a good move that kind of broadens the appeal for the NBA. So Popovich lost his top assistant. They did announce that they're going to finally play a game in Mexico City. They've had that done before, and because of a plumbing issue at the arena that they're going to play in Mexico City, they had to cancel it. But it looks like they'll be in Mexico City, and I guess because of San Antonio's large Hispanic population, that kind of trickles down to Mexico, and I've been told by friends of mine who travel to Mexico that you see Spurs stuff everywhere. So I think that'll be good for the Spurs. But as far as the team chemistry composition, they'll probably bring in some guys that can help their system. I think it's still a little bit too early to speculate a whole lot on what might be coming up as far as, the draft and free agents. But as we say in San Antonio, and Pop, we trust.
Also being in Texas, have you heard anything about, what's happening over there in Houston? I mean, there's threats of, getting rid of everybody, James Harden, Chris Paul. Have you heard anything about any movement in Houston?
I really haven't. The thing is that here in San Antonio, we hear very little about what's going on with the Spurs because they're so quiet. But, we just don't get a whole lot of coverage on the Mavericks or the Rockets, last I heard the Rockets were trying to work out some contracts with some of their players. They might be trying to reunite maybe James Harden with one of his former teammates, you know. But when I say that, I'm talking about Westbrook or Bryant. I'm sorry, Durant. So I don't know. We'll see.
Don, we know that, you know, Pop made, I don't want to say, well, I guess he did kind of make NFL history when he hired a woman as a part of his coaching staff there at the Spurs. Now we see the Cavaliers, they're going to hire Lindsey Gottlieb, who was a coach out here at Cal Berkeley. Have you noticed around the NBA any substantial hirings of women to men's coaching positions, assistant coaching positions?
Popovich kind of broke the ice on that one when he had what's her name? Can't remember her name. But anyway, she coached at for the Spurs for a few seasons. She played for the San Antonio women's team. Her name is slipping my mind. I should probably know it. Probably get some hate mail from feminists because I can't remember the first female coach in the NBA, but it'll come to me eventually. But, I think we're seeing teams go out and make that decision. Cleveland did it. San Antonio did it. I think in the NFL, I think, wasn't it the Atlanta Falcons? Didn't they hire a woman for some kind of position, special teams consultant or something like that? Was it the Falcons?
Yeah, I think it was the Falcons.
I think it was the NFC, but yeah. So, I should probably not say a whole lot about it. It's just one of those things you got to kind of sit back and watch, see how it happens. Men's athletics. I'm talking about in the professional league, you know, football, basketball, baseball, they're very slow to change, except that kind of change of having, you know, women around, you know, especially remember the whole thing about women reporters and Zeke Mowat for the Patriots, that female reporter, they had that little incident where he said, he said, you want to see my Patriot missile? I was like, oh my God. Historically, professional football, baseball, basketball, they're very slow to change. So we'll see how this works out. I think the NBA probably does a better job than anybody, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see, you know, how many more women really actually apply for the position, as well as how many are sought out. Kyrie has fired his agent. He said he wants to go to New York and play for the Nets. Don, I mean, you know, I know Kyrie said, you know, well, you know, I was just didn't want to say that it was flat, you know, and you know, but you know, when you look at his decision making on, you know, down the line, I know you talk about this guy that's playing tonight as being a strange bird, but Don, is Kyrie is he feeling like in a world by himself?
Well, we kind of talked about, I believe, his situation last week a little bit about speculation, which I think the topic was, you know, which team in the East would he end up at, perhaps? I think trying to how it says. I think that New York is, or Brooklyn, whatever you want to call it. I think that might be a good fit. You know, it's just all about him being accepted by his teammates, by the coaching staff, things that they want to do, what they want to accomplish. Does he still have enough juice in those legs to get it done? Does he have the attitude to get it done? So, I'm going to kind of have a sit and wait approach, but I think I think he might find a sense of belonging in New York. It's a big market, and he'll have plenty of time on his hands to not time on his hands, but he'll have plenty of opportunities to get a feel for the city, the vibe, and hopefully maybe restructure his career.
But Donnie, I got some problems with this. Okay, first of all, he's leaving Boston. Okay, well-run organization, well-run front office, and he couldn't get along with his teammates, the younger teammates especially. Now you're talking about going to Brooklyn, a team that made the playoffs, did very well in the playoffs, and needs a leader, someone to step up, okay? So, if you got a young team, and not to mention the difference between the New York press and the Boston press, if he thought he got grilled in the Boston press, I mean, he's going to get barbecued in New York if the Nets do bad. It doesn't matter. I mean, he'll be on the front page of the Post, the Times. He'll be on the front of the sports page consistently in New York. It's just like Football Time, New York teams. You look at Sam Darnold, you look at Eli, there's that comparison there. Even the Buffalo quarterback is thrown under the New York press. So now he also has this. Plus, if you're a front office manager, you have to. I mean, you talked about him taking intelligence tests in the NFL. Maybe somebody needs to administer him an IQ test. Also, that's another question. But anyway. Don, would you want to bring Kyrie into a situation where you have young guys that are just starting their careers but have tasted the playoffs?
Yeah, so here's what I always say. Winning changes everything. If you're worried about getting bad press, go win. Win games, go perform. If you're worried about getting, taking shit from your fan base, go out and win. If you're worried about winning over your teammates, go out and win. I mean, winning solves a lot of problems. So, that's what I'm saying. Kyrie, he has a fresh opportunity starting from scratch, new team, new environment. He needs to make the most of this and, prove to the skeptics like myself that he can get it done,
Well, I'm one of those skeptics too. I mean, you left LeBron talking about you wanted your own team. To me, except for the mental part, I'm seeing a lot of parallels with KD, but we'll talk about that a little bit later, because I think KD has a much better head on his shoulders and he's a much better teammate. But, Doc wins Coach of the Year award. Do you think that this was his best year of coaching since he was with the Celtics? when you look at what he had to work with?
You know, I thought that was an interesting choice, but when I kind of contemplated and thought about it, I said, yeah, that I thought Doc did a – I mean, I think it's well-deserved. You know, he's been around a while, and he's, you know, he's had a he's had some ups and downs in his coaching career. You know, his playing career is fine, but I always liked him. I always admired him. So I'm happy that he got that award.
You know, I do. I mean, when you look at when he had the Celtics, you know, he had Kevin Garnett, he had Paul, he had Rondo. You know, so when you look at the talent that he had around him, they were relatively easy to coach basketball. They might not have been easy meshing the personalities, but when you look at the job that he's done with the Clippers, you know, Chris Paul is gone, Blake Griffin's gone, you know, and he has this young nucleus that people are talking about now. Clippers being a destination in L.A., whereas they before they were stepsisters. You know, going to L.A. was, you know, going to the Clippers was like going to the Pelicans or the Sacramento Kings. You know, now people are talking about the Clippers and talking about their chances even for next year. So, yeah, I think Doc did a great job this year. Glad to see him get the award. Yeah, I think he actually got through a lot of people's radar because I don't think people were expecting that out of the Clippers. Donna, let's see. The Clippers and the Lakers, they're in talks with the Pelicans for AD. But, Donna, do you think that AD will end up a Laker, or do you think he'll end up as part of the Twin Towers in Boston? You know, Al Horford and AD. Well, what do you think? Especially, you know, with Kyrie talking about, hey, man, I'm ready to go. You know, I mean, come on. What do you think?
I kind of think he might end up in Boston. That's just kind of my gut feeling. You know, California is kind of full of or has her share of superstars and superstar wannabes. So I think he might have to go east. That's just kind of my gut feeling. I have not had a conversation with the gentleman, but Boston is a pretty good city, I think. You know, you got a good sports, you got a good fan base. You know, the Red Sox, they have the great fan base. The Patriots, awesome fan base. Celtics, awesome fan base. So I always look at the culture of the city and how they treat their franchises. And Boston is probably one of the top sports cities in the United States.
Oh, man, if you're a hero in Boston, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, man, you know, like, like Tim Duncan having to pay for a meal in San Antonio. It ain't going to happen. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another guy that the Lakers seem to be interested in, and as well as the Knicks and the Mavericks. They all seem to be interested in Kemba Walker. But Kemba Walker says he'll take less to stay in Charlotte as a Hornet. Number one, do you think that he'll get his wish? And number two, do you think that maybe Kemba might be a little self-confident about stepping out on a big stage like Los Angeles or New York? Yeah, I mean, not so much Dallas, but the other two especially.
Well, in that situation, you have to prove that sometimes it's not always about money. You know, I don't know what his personal life is. I don't know if he's married, has kids. But, you know, when you get to a certain place in your life, you start throwing more factors in than just money. You want to say, you know, is Charlotte a good place I could is a good place to raise a family? They have good schools, low crime, and what's your cost of living? And I think, you know, as athletes get older and they get closer to retirement, they start thinking about stuff like that. Not that he's close to retirement. I'm just saying, you know, but, you know, it takes a, you know, it takes a maturity to look, you know, to look beyond tomorrow. You know, you start planning for the future, and that, you know, that might be part of it. I mean, you know, if I give you my own personal story, I mean, I've had, you know, opportunities to go make more money and, you know, go get, I just got offered a couple weeks ago to get back in coaching. But I'm happy where I'm at. You know, I'm at that stage of my life where, you know, I'm happy and, you know, the state of Texas just gave the Texas teachers a nice pay increase across the board. So, you know, I'm happy. So, you know, I don't want to go out and jeopardize my happiness. And maybe that's what he's thinking about by, you know, turn in the big contracts to stay put. I admire that.
Yeah. You have to admire. That comes under the banner of loyalty to me. And, you know, as you know, one of the things that I value as a soldier was loyalty. So if that's the reason, or if those reasons are part of, you know, his decision, because I think he'll get his wish. I mean, after all, what team wouldn't rather take somebody, you know, at a much lower rate, especially if the player is content with it? You know, he kind of gave him a bargaining chip. But, Kimba is one of those kids. I think he's very loyal to the Hornets, very loyal to Michael for giving him a chance. I think it does have a lot to do with loyalty. So I think he will remain a Hornet. I know it's kind of early, but with this attitude here, I'm pretty sure he'll retire as a Hornet also. Don, let's talk about the hard stuff here. Let's talk about your alumni, KD. He made a call to and his call ended badly. But Don, you know, we've all seen that player, you know, put me in, coach. I'm all right. And he can't walk, you know. He's bent over to one side, you know. Nose bleeding, but coach, I can play one more play. We admire that, but yet and still, you know, when something happens, then the first thing we say is, well, the coach said to put him in, or they knew he was too hurt to play. Don, how much do you think that this really indicates not only his loyalty to Golden State, but perhaps that he wants to stay in Golden State? I mean, he could have just as easily sat out got the money that he's going to get in free agency, be it Golden State or anywhere else. What did you admire his move, or did you think that, you know, the team should have put his health first?
Well, let me just say this as a former athlete and coach. I have mad respect for KD. I've been kind of hard on KD a little bit, just kind of the stuff he's articulated while he's been out in California. But when it comes down to it, I have mad respect. I mean, my God. It's the finals, you know, and if he thinks he can play and you got Kevin Durant on your team and, you know,
and
it's going to be a tough series.
And you're down. And you're down 3-1.
Yeah.
Don't forget that.
So yeah, I mean, like I said, that's just mad. I mean, you go out and do it. You get it done. And unfortunately, it didn't turn out too well. But, you know, I saw an interview with Tiger Woods, which was about Tiger Woods earlier. Tiger Woods, you know, came out and said, hey, I would have done the same thing, because when you're an athlete, you have that drive, you have that competitiveness, you want to see things happen. And you know, he felt his team needed him, and he went in and he went out and he went out and did it and got it done.
He scored 13 points in 11 minutes. Okay, you know, didn't miss a shot from the field. I don't think. As a matter of fact, I think he could hold that to me. I don't think he missed a shot from the field until the injury. You know, I do admire any athlete that, you know, has that much will to play through an injury, support his teammates. Like I said, I mean, they were down 3-1. He could have just as easily said, you know, well, hey, you know, I haven't played these first four games, you know, whatever, let the chips fall where they may. But, Don, once again, I kind of want you to do you think that this was part of his loyalty to Golden State? Do you think that possibly this shows how much he wants to stay in Golden State because they can't offer him the max money? Or do you think that you know, now he, especially if Golden State loses tonight, but, you know, now what do you think about the statement that he made? Did he make a statement that, hey, I'll be a great teammate, you know, wherever I go? Or do you think he made a statement to the Golden State fans, hey, I'd really like to stay here and get another ring to pass LeBron before I leave? What do you think?
Well, here's another way of looking at it. You can say, yes, he made a statement to Golden State that he's, you know, he's willing to go out and sacrifice his health for the good of the team. And that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is he's telling the other teams, hey, look, I'm dependable. If you need me, you know, in the tough series, championship, everything on the line, he's telling the other teams in the league, you can count on me. I can go out there and you know, like I said, sacrifice my health to win a game. And in a roundabout way, because the type of injury he suffered, which is you know, it's a serious, it's a season ender, but it's not a career ender necessarily. You know, we've seen players come back from that before. So, you know, Golden State might say, well, he might be damaged goods. Well, that opens it up, you know, the bidding wars for the other teams. You know, that might be what they call it, the unintended consequences. You know, so there's different ways of looking at it, but he's in a unique position, so to say. So I think right now it's 50-50 if he returns to Golden State, but I think he's going to have his options.
Oh, definitely. He'll definitely have his options. But you do bring up a good point there. You know, Golden State could say he's damaged goods. Nah, I don't think so. You know, if it comes down to getting, you know, being able to afford Clay and KD, or, you know, it should be very interesting. But under the current rules, he can get the most money from Golden State. Just because of his status there. But how do you think this will impact his value as a free agent? Do you think, you know, that less teams are going to be interested? Or do you think that, maybe teams are going to offer him less money. What do you think? Like you said, it doesn't have to be a career-ending injury, especially for what we all consider the heir apparent to the greatest basketball, the greatest basketball player, scorer even in the modern era. So, I mean, what do you think? Less money, more teams, less money. Your thoughts there?
Well, I think.
If his value drops enough, you might be able to put him in a Spurs uniform, Doc.
Well, you know, I'd love for him to come to San Antonio because you know what? If he gets injured, he'll go out and play. He won't wash out like Kawhi Leonard did, which still is a pain. It's a sharp stabbing pain in the back. You know, when you're a franchise player, you know, closes out a season for some phantom injury. At least KD's out there willing to go out there and sacrifice. And I think Popovich would really appreciate that, and I know our fan base would. So, you know, hey, I can dream, right?
Hey, and he's a UT alumni, Don.
He is. You know, it's
we never get you here on a Thursday night, Don. Let's go to the finals here. I haven't switched back on. Did you have the score there, Funny? You watching it, Don?
Yeah, it's 53-51, less than 2 minutes. Toronto's up by two. But as we know, Golden State, that's another thing for Golden State.
Well,
They just took the lead, 54-53. So 3 points.
See, as we speak, I know Toronto has scored the first 8 or 11 points right out of the gate. And but as you said, but let's talk a little bit about, because Don, you know, I'm going to tell you something that. I'm sure you remember it, but you just didn't remember that it was today. And that was in 1997, Steve Kerr clinched his title with Mike. Today, while the Warriors are playing the sixth game. Don, right now, it's kind of the Splash Brothers are bust. With the absence of KD, and I mean, Looney wasn't there when they won, their moniker as the Splash Brothers. So, Don, do you think that the Splash Brothers can, number one, hold on to the dynasty, even though it would mean coming back from 3-1, from 3-1 down, and Don, Is this, like going back to one of those football metaphors, is this a win one for the giver tonight? Win one for KD? This is going to be our last game at Oracle. Chris Webber said there wouldn't be another game in Oracle. So, this is just, are they going to go out with, losing 3 in a row at home to Toronto? Are they going to hold home court? Donna, how important do you think this game 6 is for Golden State? Not so much the Raptors, but for Golden State to hold serve at home, even if they lose game 7 in Toronto.
Yeah, I think it's, again, this is a sports writer's dream. This is stuff that they'll be talking about for a while. If if Golden State can pull it off. But as far as winning a win for the Gipper, it's probably in the back of everyone's minds. I don't know if anyone's come out and actually said it as far as, you know, Coach Kerr or whoever. But I think we're going to see something special. Well, we already are because, you know, if Golden State wins, they're just, you know, they're just continuing their dynasty, which is they'll be talking about them, you know, with the Lakers, Celtics, and of course Chicago. If Toronto wins, you know, a non-American team, some Canadians won it. So this is a special series, and I think that's why ratings are up.
Klay Thompson, you know, I spoke about him a little bit earlier. He's just been stupid crazy from 3-point range. When they couldn't get a second half shot off for Curry, Klay Thompson stood up to the plate every time. You see this young kid here, Looney, he's playing through an injury. And then you see Boogie Cousins, giving Boogie the ball is kind of like, you know, throwing a ball up to Dallas wide receivers. It's a 50-50 chance every time. Oh, you don't know what's going to happen. Luckily, in game five, he made some good plays, but then he made some bone plays right there at the end that they gave Toronto a chance to actually win the game. Don, is Klay Thompson actually really the glue or the compass for tonight's game?
Can you repeat that question? I didn't understand that last part.
Do you feel that Klay Thompson's performance is the compass to tonight's game? What do they, you know, the direction they take from here? Like I said, I mean, you know, he's been absolutely phenomenal from 3-point range, and that's helped him win, helped him stay in the game. Not to mention his defense. You know, all things that they could lose. You know, with him going into free agency. How important is Klay Thompson to this team and the continuance of his dominance?
Well, yeah, you're talking about this guy, you know, when you talk about the great shooters in the NBA, it's, you know, you got, you know, two of the top five shooters, you know, playing for Golden State. And, if Klay Thompson has the type of second half they had the first half, I mean, that'll put him up over 40-something points. So, he's going to be a vital mm-hmm. part of this game. And to me, why I think it's kind of outstanding, or not outstanding, but kind of interesting to watch, is that Kawhi Leonard has, I think, 9 points and 3 fouls. He's not even leading the scorer, and yet they're ahead. So, Klay Thompson has to continue giving a good performance, and his other teammates going to have to step up and play defense because, you know, he can't go out and score. He and Curry can't go out and score 40-something points and still have them lose. That's just not the way it should be.
People talked about the offense of Klay and Curry, but how important is the defense of Draymond Green? As you know, I mean, it was Draymond Green that actually altered Salam's shot so it hit the backboard when they had a chance to win that game in game four. game five, when his last shot hit the backboard. So, you know, people always talk about their offense, but you had three solid defenders that are able to lock down at all times. So, is it the Warriors' defense that comes off the bench that we have to be worried about, rather than, you know, how many points they put up on the board?
Yeah, I mean, their bench is, you know, they're gonna have to step up and keep Toronto from making easy buckets. That's a given. We've seen this time and time again throughout the year where, you know, teams that require on their star players, they kind of falter, and it has to be someone else that comes out and takes care of business. And I think that's what we might be seeing tonight, hopefully, because I want to see some more basketball. I'm not ready to say goodbye to the basketball season just yet.
Well, then I guess I shouldn't even ask you this last question. Will the Raptors hoist the trophy at Oracle? So I can already see that you had the same outlook that I do. You know, let's get in game seven, you know, and you know, hopefully, you know, let's bring the trophy back to America where it already is. But, you know, I want a game seven. Just for the drama and for something to talk about next week. But right now the Raptors are up 60-57. Don, what are your thoughts here? Is this looking like game one all over again, deja vu?
Yeah, it kind of has that vibe, doesn't it? Again, this has been just one of those, like, again, classic series. I think, you know, ESPN might do a 30 for 30 on it. it's just that type of game. Hopefully, I mean, I'd really have a dog in this race, but, you know, I am proud to be an American. I don't want to see Canada take our title. We have to compete with them enough in hockey, and so I want to keep it here, and I don't want Kawhi Leonard to get a ring that's not earned in San Antonio. So
see, you do but, have a dog in the voice now.
Well, I do, but.
Anybody that's not Kawhi.
But you know the other Raptors, you know, they seem to be you know, I like Lowry, you know, so it's just you know, I really don't have any dislike for anyone except for Kawhi, and he just happens to be playing for Toronto. If he's not playing for Toronto, you know, I'm probably a little bit more I don't really care attitude, but like I said, I got my Spurs blood flowing right now.
You know, Don, they've had quite a few people talk about KD's injury and you know, the risk they took and things like that. Is there a football player that comes to your mind, past or present, that you can think of that made this kind of sacrifice or took this kind of risk that KD took?
What was that question again?
Can you think of a football player that took the same type of risk for his team and his career that Kevin Durant took for the Warriors in Game 5?
A football player comparable to what Durant did in Game 5. NFL. The closest thing I can think of might have been Jamal Charles when he was playing with the Chiefs. He suffered that catastrophic knee injury, but they weren't in the Super Bowl or anything. I think it was a late season game. I really can't think of a similar situation in the NFL. I'm sure there has been, but I can't. My mind is drawing a blank.
Well, that was, you know, one of the reasons why I was asking, because a lot of names went through my mind, but I couldn't necessarily put the same injury with them. But I mean, you know, there are a lot of players that have I think, you know, I'm trying to think of who was he was a DB, and he was waving to the fans as he went off the field, but I don't remember him ever recurring, coming back. You could think of Eric Berry and the injury that he returned from, and he came back and played with the Kansas City Chiefs. Even though he didn't end up getting the ring, he did end up being in the title game. I think what he played the last 4 games of the season, something like that. You know, now once again, he's looking for a job. You know, he's a free agent. Not quite as much money, but I would point that out as the same dedication to the team. Now that the finals are here, there's not a whole lot that, for us to talk about except for the finals and the NBA, of course. Any particular news that you'd like to talk about from the NFL or any other sports before we get out of here?
Well, of course, NFL, they're starting their mini camps and all that. But I do want to point out, going back to the NBA, that one of our fan favorites here in San Antonio, Mr. Tony Parker, announced his retirement. Now, here's a guy that had a very similar injury to what Durant had. Of course, Parker was a lot older. He's a little bit further advanced in his career, a little bit harder to come back from, but he did come back from it, and he played, 5-6 more seasons, and he announced his retirement earlier this week. And so from what we understand is he's going to keep his house in San Antonio. He owns a business here. He owns a nightclub that's real popular, and he's a fan favorite, and he's, like I said, earlier in the show, I was talking about how players will often, look at a city that they want to retire to for the future, and, again, good schools, low crime, good weather, good climate, low standard of living, and so he's going to retire in San Antonio, just like Manu Ginobili lives here, and Dave Robinson and Tim Duncan. Sean Elliott, all these former players who are not native Texans have all decided to come back to San Antonio. And so he's not even American. He's a Frenchman, and he's coming to live in San Antonio. We welcome him with open arms. So Welcome back, Tony Parker. We hope you enjoy your retirement. See you at the AT Center.
Well, Ginobili retired there, and he's not I imagine they're all American citizens now, but I mean, you know,
I think he's still Argentine. I think he's still an Argentine, so. But that's fine. He's here, and we love him. But I don't care where he's from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but a lot of them carried dual citizenship. just in order to own property and things like that, tax purposes, whatnot. I did forget about the retirement of Tony, I thought he was living in San Antonio all the time and anywhere else. I mean, automatically assumed that, he was going to be living in San Antonio. I assume Tim Duncan would be in San Antonio, even though he's Dominican. But the way that they held in such esteem, it would seem to be an automatic thing. Does Pop live in San Antonio?
Yeah. Huh. I believe he lives out in the Dominion with George Strait and David Robinson.
Oh, okay. You got a nice little community out there. Don't have to worry about the music. You can always bring a basketball.
There you go.
Wow, that went down the wrong way, right? Donna, why don't you give us your final thoughts for the evening? Tell me where I can find you on social media. And, hey, thanks for sticking around with the old man tonight. And we look forward to having a good time again next week. Looking for another guest next week. I won't tell anybody who it is yet, but maybe another
All
guy
right.
that throws a round ball. So we'll see.
Sounds great. Well, final thoughts. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to watch the rest of this game, and hopefully I have another game to watch in a few days. It's good to be on the show. I can be found at Don Hayes on Facebook, social media, or Purple3 on Instagram. It's great being on the show tonight, and I look forward to next week. Hopefully we'll have our Kalani back and I haven't been on the show with Kalani in about 3 weeks now, so hopefully we'll get to see him next week.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can get to see you next week also. I did manage to talk to him today, so I know he's rather busy with Youth Football League, but we definitely want to get him on and find out what's going on with that. And like you said, Donna, he didn't talk about a little of his duties and watching tape and what they play and things like that. So, yeah, we definitely need to get Kalani back on here. I'm gonna make sure we hound him to get back with us next week. So, thank you everyone for listening. We appreciate your time. Finish watching the rest of tonight's game. And hopefully, like Don said, I believe the next game would be Sunday, hopefully. I need something to watch on Sunday. That would be good. Check us out again next week. We look forward to talking with everyone. Hope we can have Kalani back as well as Bill. Thank you so much, Don, and thank you to our listeners. Look forward to talking to you next week right here on the Sports Crib. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.